This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered spiritually on transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communication, living interdimensionally and being multi-sensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're more than welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. Telephone toll-free 877-876-5227. That number right now is good only in the U.S. and Canada, so if you want to ring from other parts of the world, please ring 530-876-3222. And also, you are welcome to visit my website, which is towarddelight.org. And please bear with me, I'm feeling a little under the weather this evening, but we will work it out because I've got a wonderful guest, someone that I've been very much looking forward to having on our show. She is the president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and her name is Jan Holden. Welcome, Jan. How are you?
I'm good, Juliet. I wish you were feeling better.
Well, thank you. I'll be all right, and I'm just so pleased to be speaking with you again and to do this show.
Yes, so
I know
here.
That's going to be good medicine right there.
Great.
And what I normally like to do is, I know that everybody I talk to has accomplished quite a lot, either a book and or a film or being a physician or a counselor or a physicist or what have you, but there's always a special experience, it seems, that brought each and every one of you to where you are now. So I know that you are a counselor, you are also a professor at the University of Northern Texas,
Texas, that's right.
And you've also had a spiritually transformative experience, or SPE. So what I would like to do, Jan, is start off by asking you to share a bit of your SPE or SPEs, and then we can get into what led you to where you are now, especially being the president of IAM. So share, if you will, please, a bit about your SPE.
Okay. Well, I've experienced a few different kinds of STEs. I've experienced, I think probably the first kind of experience I remember having is what I call deja vu premonition. It happens at the same time that I experience deja vu in a situation and I also get a premonition about something in the future. And an example of that, a kind of humorous example, is that many years ago, my ex-husband and I were living in the Chicago area, and we were in the market for a motorhome. And we went to over to Michigan to look at a motorhome that he just fell in love with. On the way back, we stopped at a McDonald's restaurant. And from the moment he picked up the tray where you buy it at the counter, all the way walking to the table, sitting the tray down, and then he pointed his thumb back to the restrooms, and he said, I'm going to hit the bathroom before I sit down and eat. And he turned and walked away. That whole time, I had a deja vu and a premonition that this motorhome was not a good thing. And so when he got back, we started eating, and at the first opportunity, when a little silence fell in our conversation, I said, you know, I need to tell you something about what just happened. And he knew that I had these and that the premonitions were quite accurate. And so when I told him, the premonition was that the motorhome was not going to be a good purchase, he kind of threw down his hamburger and said an expletive comment. And I said, no, it's okay. We can buy it. It's just that it's going to be a problem. And so he, for this one time, thought maybe my premonition was wrong. Well, we bought the motorhome, and beginning with the exploding toilet, that actually, instead of flushing, exploded out onto the person.
Okay.
if you've ever seen the movie The Money Pit, this was like a money pit on wheels. It had to have the roof. It was a 40-foot motorhome. The entire roof had to be replaced. The windshields fell out of it. At one point, we're driving down the road. The windshield fell out. We had three different blowouts that blew out all kinds of wires and things. So we fixed everything on that thing and got it just into mint condition and then sold it. But I've had that kind of experience several times. And then I've had after-death communication in dreams and symbolic ones with butterflies and those sorts of things. I've had four mystical experiences, one when I was about 30 and the other when I was about 45, 46. The other three happened in about a three-month period. So, and in the mystical experiences, these were experiences of communion with the light. And so they were very, very powerful and just some of the most profound of my life. I guess I would have to say the most profound of my life. So I've had a few different kinds.
That's really interesting, and I'm really pleased that you're sharing this, because something that can be so simple is so often not only overlooked but balked at.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that really does need to change, and perhaps as we share more and more of these experiences with the public, people are going to start to even honor their own experiences more, their own intuitions, and really realizing that these insights are there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they can save us a lot of catastrophe, you know, by being honored and acknowledged. So
yeah.
That is quite something.
Well, you know, I really agree with what you're saying. I've had this experience, and you may have too, that when I speak in public, almost always there are people who will either have the courage to say something in front of the whole group or come up to me afterwards and say, I've never told anyone before, but, and then they'll go on to describe what in many cases is the most meaningful transpersonal experience of their life. And I have this sense that there's a whole subculture of people out there who have had transpersonal experiences that transcend the normal limits of space and time that we deal with in normal physical life, and yet don't talk about them, I think mostly for fear that they will be judged as crazy, or that their experience will just be passed off as some kind of hallucination and dismissed and belittled, and I think these experiences for most people are so precious and meaningful that to be misunderstood and discounted is even more painful than to hold the experience in and not talk about it. And when they finally find someone that they feel safe with, that they have a sense will understand and be open to what they experienced, they are eager to pour their hearts out. And I just think that it's very sad that our culture devalues transpersonal experiences because they're not just logical and rational and measurable and all those things that our Western culture has come to value so much. So I really agree that it's important for people who are credible and living successful lives to acknowledge that they've had these kinds of experiences, so it becomes known that they're normal and even life-enhancing rather than something negative or detrimental.
I'm so pleased you've mentioned this because, actually, in all honesty, it is something that I still wrestle with on occasion, feeling that I'm going to be judged and misunderstood, and I am living in the South in America, which is not the easiest place to be in,
mm-hmm.
and to have and talk about these experiences. But that brings me to another really interesting point, and that is the fact that I had never heard of Raymond Moody. I had never heard the term near-death experience. I had never heard of any of that until the late 90s. It was, I realized when I was talking with Peter Schocke that it was as a result of somebody sharing the film that he produced based on Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life.
Mm-hmm.
That when I saw that, I said, these people are just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was in 1997, almost 10 years ago, which is a very short period of time ago, that someone told me about IAMS. And I said, you're kidding, there's an organization centered on near-death experiences?
Mm-hmm.
It blew me away. So I joined the organization straight away, and that was the very first time I had my coming out, as it were, but I didn't really fully come out until 2002.
Mm.
So I joined the organization and I started breaking out of the shell, as it were, but then to really put myself out there for the world, as I'm doing now, that was a much more recent development, and I've got to say thank you to IAMS.
Well,
the ability to do that.
Yeah, I'm so glad that the organization had a role in helping you feel more confident to represent yourself as you truly are to the world. So that's really great, and that is one of the benefits I think that IAMS has brought to the world, is it has connected people who've had near-death experiences and really legitimized the discussion of these experiences, because they have been studied and acknowledged by very careful scientists. And I think that helps to bring legitimacy and help people who've had these experiences feel more courageous and safer to acknowledge that fact. So yeah, I'm glad that IAMS helped you that way.
Well, it's pretty tremendous, because as I said, I was really quite a newbie compared to a lot of people who already knew about the word near-death experience. They had found out about it shortly after Raymond Moody had written the book and come up with that term.
Mm-hmm.
And IAMS itself actually was originally formulated in the late 70s and then became the International Association for Near-Death Studies back in 1982. And see, I had no idea, but better late than never.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's really come a long way now. We're talking about 30 years, am I right, that
yeah.
IAMS has been in existence altogether?
That's right. Yes, well, from 1975 through 2005 is 30 years. So since Moody wrote Life After Life and coined the term near-death experience in 75, we've had 30 years of research. And that is the topic or the theme of our annual conference this year that's going to be held in Houston, October 25th through 28th at MD Anderson Cancer Center, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And it's going to be a four-day conference. In the first 2 days, we've divided the field of near-death studies into 10 topics that together pretty comprehensively cover the field. And then we've identified one or two renowned researchers in the field to present each of the papers. So in 2 days, a person could get a thorough crash course on everything that's known about NDEs from research over the last 30 years. And then after that will be two more days where we will have some of the more traditional IONS conference activities, like each day there will be an NDE panel where usually we have four near-death experiencers who in the course of an hour or an hour and 15 minutes each tell their story briefly of their NDE and its after effects in their life, and then answer questions briefly from the audience. And we'll also have some people presenting new research that has not been published yet. For example, we have a nurse from Wales who conducted a seven-year, what we call a prospective study, meaning that everybody in her hospital who went into cardiac and respiratory arrest, she interviewed as soon as they, and of course was resuscitated, she interviewed as soon as they were stable, and got a really good sense of how many people have near-death experiences and how extensive they are typically and things like that. And among the cases, I have read little pieces of reports of her research, and there was a man who was born with a hand deformity who apparently was healed during his near-death experience. And she also studied veridical perception, which is a particular interest of mine. So she'll be presenting anyway in those second 2 days. Her name is Penny Sartori. She's a PhD in nursing. And we'll be having panels of some of the experts from around the world discussing various aspects of how everything we know about near-death experiences can be applied to palliative care for people who are terminally ill, end-of-life care, and clinical settings like counseling and psychotherapy. People who've had near-death experiences who seek professional help, how professionals can be knowledgeable and helpful to NDEers, and just caregivers in general, medical caregivers, nurses who are most likely to hear a near-death experience the first time someone tells it. So the second 2 days will have a lot of variety and choices of talks that people can go to. So we're really looking forward to this as a landmark event. IONS has put on a conference virtually every year for about the past 15 years, but we've never had one in such a prestigious medical setting as MD Anderson. So we're really thinking that between that and the fact that we're gathering all the known researchers, Raymond Moody is going to be speaking at one of the lunches. The banquet speaker will be Janice Amatuzio, who wrote a wonderful book called Forever Ours. She's a coroner, and over the years she has collected stories from her own experience or the experiences of the families with whom she works when someone has died, and compiled them, and they're all transpersonal stories, some of them near-death experiences, some nearing death awareness, some after-death communication. Here's a physician, a coroner, talking about these experiences happening to just, you know, regular people. And so we just have a lot of really exciting things lined up for the conference, and are really looking forward to it as a landmark event in the field of near-death studies.
This sounds really, really exciting, Jan, and I'm so looking forward to knowing more about the conference as we get closer to that.
And
the tremendous lineup of speakers you've got, and something being the fact that I live in Nashville, Tennessee, USA, where it's a huge medical community and facilities here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really been important to me to see about getting people in medical facilities educated
mm-hmm.
about the near-death and similar spiritually transformative experiences, because, again, it's really important that these misunderstandings and that these judgments be removed
mm-hmm.
about what is actually happening to the dying person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
That's why I've written articles about it, too, and that's why I'm doing this show, because anyone that can access this information, I think, is going to feel 1,000% better knowing that these experiences are valid, they are real, and I'm even going to have a physicist coming up here on my show on the 24th of the month, Claude Swanson, and he's written a wonderful book called Synchronized Universe,
mm-hmm.
where, as a physicist, he is proving the validity of the near-death and out-of-body experience, all forms of intuition, telepathy, ESP, remote viewing, all of these things that are beyond the confines of the physical senses are being proven as being real and valid and very, very powerful. So I look forward to the impact that IAMS is continuing to make, you know, in the medical communities especially, so that less and less people are going to be accusing experiences like myself as having had a hallucination or what have you, because hallucinations and near-death experiences are radically, radically different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been actually quite a bit of research about that, and on from several different points, it's clear that near-death experiences and hallucinations are quite different. For one thing, when a person has hallucinated and then returns to what we'll call, you know, normal everyday consciousness, they recognize that what they experienced was not real. But when a person has had a near-death experience and they return to normal everyday consciousness, they tend to be quite adamant that their experience was not only real, but more real than normal everyday experience. Hallucinations, as the English physician Peter Fenwick likes to remind us, are always confusional, and near-death experiences are very meaningful storylines that although they involve transpersonal elements, they follow a kind of sequence and a meaningful story. People who have both experienced hallucinations, like having a really high fever while they were ill at one time, and then in another situation had a near-death experience, themselves say that the hallucinations and a near-death experience are not at all similar experiences. So the only thing that they have in common is that they involve perceptions that are beyond the physical world, but beyond that, they are just quite different. So I completely agree with you, and that is one of IAM's big focuses, is educating medical professionals. One of our board members, Debbie James, is a nurse who did her master's thesis on disclosure of near-death experiences, and she found that if a near-death experiencer, first of all, most near-death experiencers are likely to report their experience for the first time to a nurse, and those who are met with reassurance, and that the that they're not alone, that other people have had these kinds of experiences, and they're validated as their perception having been real, and they're given information. They are much more likely to continue to talk about their experience and to have a better course of sort of adjusting to the new information that, that people tend to receive in NDEs. And conversely, if the patient was met with disbelief or discounting or pathologizing, they tended to clam up and then not do as well, because most people find it helpful to be able to talk about the experience and process it in that way.
Absolutely, and that's what happened to me. For the longest time, I was totally locked up.
Mm.
And it was only in more recent years that I've been able to come out, as mm-hmm. were, again, and writing about my NDE. And then when I've been asked to give talks about it, every time I've given a talk about it, every time I've even brought it up during one of our FOI meetings, the Friends of Irons meetings here in Nashville, it not only helps everybody who is hearing about it or reading about it, but it helps me to remember, and to remember the truth that I gleaned as a result of going through these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps to keep me on track.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good therapy, you know,
mm-hmm.
for the listener as well as for the one sharing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's been my experience too, talking with a lot of people, that, and that's part of why I lead an IANS local group here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as well, because I enjoy hearing these stories. It's just amazing. As many as I've heard, I'm still just fascinated to hear more people's experiences. And like you, I find that being able to talk about my own experiences, particularly mystical experiences, really is helpful to me. It helps remind me about what's really important, and just reconnect with that sense of love and acceptance, and then I feel more able to sort of broadcast that same quality in my life. So so there's a lot of good that comes out of talking about near-death and near-death-like experiences.
Mm-hmm. I even see people's whole demeanor change once they leave the meeting. You know, they feel so much lighter. They feel safe. They mm-hmm. feel loved. They remember what is real and what is most important. Can't really be perceived on physical plane.
Yeah.
So it is important to have these outlets where people can get together, where they can share these experiences. And I share what you're saying too, that every time I hear about somebody else's experience, I'm in awe, I have a sense of wonder. It just brings it all back home all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very important. This work is exceedingly important. And now, I would like to ask you, when did you become involved with IANS? What led you to IANS and then finally becoming president of IANS? Because you've been our president for a few years now.
Yes, I'm about to wrap up my third and what will be my final year as president, at least for now. There's a rule that someone can be on the board of directors for 6 years and then they have to rotate off for a year. So my 6 years will be up at the end of this year. I became involved when I was doing my doctoral dissertation back in the mid-80s. And I think I must have started my dissertation in around 86. And I actually had tried six other studies to do my dissertation on, and they all, for one reason or another, fell through. And finally, I did this one. Well, a little background. I have always been interested in transpersonal phenomena, and so when Moody's book came out in 1975, I read it with relish, and had always been fascinated. There's more to the story. I don't know how much you want to hear about all of this, but I've just been very interested in research on the survival of the human soul after death.
Oh,
and
indeed.
Yeah, so so when it came time to find a dissertation topic that I could do, one of the things that I had become quite passionate, developed quite a passionate interest in, is the phenomenon of veridical perception, where in some people's near-death experiences that have the out-of-body phase, where they're looking down on the their physical body and the surrounding area, that they sometimes see things that are impossible to have seen from the vantage point of their physical body.
Exactly.
And after they're resuscitated, they report it, and then in there are several cases in the professional literature where the medical people verified the accuracy of what was seen. So I wanted to study this, but in order to do so, I really needed to know, actually, the sixth idea for my dissertation was to actually do a veridical perception study, and I did get so far as to set one up at Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois, with the help of then-chaplain Lee Jostin. And the problem was that because the patients were going into cardiac arrest at a much lower rate than we'd originally expected, and I had a deadline to finish my dissertation, I had to abandon the study and do a different kind of study. So what I did was to study visual perception in that out-of-body state, because I needed to know things like whether blue in the body looks like blue when you're out of the body, and whether vision tends to be clear or fuzzy, and whether people can read in the out-of-body state, and, you know, just all kinds of things like that about their visual perception, in order to know how I could go about studying veridical perception. So so in order to do this study, I had to have a lot of NDEers to send questionnaires to, and I found the International Association for Near-Death Studies and connected up with Bruce Grayson, who was then research director and actually still is, and he helped me distribute my questionnaire to, I think, 80 or 90 people altogether, of whom 67 responded, which in research that's an incredibly high response rate, but NDEers tend to be pretty helpful people, so they helped me out there. So ever since then, and I published my study in I broke it into three different articles and published them in the Journal of Near-Death Studies, and then just remained a member and receiving the journal for years. And then in 1999, a TV reporter from San Antonio learned about my interest and came up and interviewed me, and did a clip of her interview of me on the TV news, 10 o'clock news down in San Antonio, and Debbie James, who was on the board saw it and went to the board and said, I think we need to have this person on the board. You know, she's up at the University of North Texas, and she's been a member of IN since forever. And so I got a call one Saturday night from Diane Corcoran, who I knew who she was, but I was surprised she knew who I was. And she invited me to join the board. So I'd never been on a board. I didn't have any idea what was going to be involved. And I went to my first meeting and realized I was with kindred spirits, and stayed on, and then I think served for a year as secretary, and then was elected president, and have been serving in that capacity now for 3 years.
Well, that is tremendous, and it's quite auspicious how special events like that will lead us to the special place that we are now.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of wonderful to know that the universe can work in these good ways.
Oh, you were so clearly led, and that is tremendous. When I joined IAN, it was Diane who was the president at that time, and I was so excited and so grateful to get the vital signs. And also at that time, IAN was publishing a directory.
Yeah.
So people could contact one another, the directory of NBEers and members from all over the world.
Yeah.
And that's tremendous, just an opportunity for people who are experiencers to connect, and also to create a good ground for more research and validation. And what is, you know, at this point, where is IAN at with all of this? What is IAN offering the experiencer at this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, probably the most exciting new development, it was this past year holding the first ever retreat for near-death experiencers, a week-long, or I think it was 4 or 5 days, in the St. Louis area. And Linda Jacklin headed that up. She had been vice president of IANS for a few years and is now editor of the IANS newsletter, Vital Signs. And she, along with a couple of other people, Yolaine Stout and a few others, got the retreat together. And 27 people attended, and I understand that it was just a wonderful event. So so that's the newest and most exciting thing. We're hoping to offer that pretty much every year. We have to see how that all flushes out, but right now that's a definite possibility. Other things that experiencers can benefit from in joining IANS is receiving the newsletter that contains one near-death experience in depth in each issue. And
you're talking about the vital sign.
Yeah, the vital sign.
Every quarter.
Right, exactly. It comes out every 3 months. And the conference that we have held pretty much every year, when NDEers come to that, as I said, we have the panel of NDEers. We usually have a breakout session for NDEers only, and this year we're hoping to have even more time for NDEers to spend together, and just the opportunity to meet other people and network and share stories and go out to meals together, and all that is a really wonderful experience. And you mentioned the directory. IANS had, the board had discontinued that a few years ago because of the expense of compiling and mailing it. And now with We have a wonderful new marketing person on the board, Alan Katzoff, and he has really spearheaded bringing IANs together electronically to a degree that we never have before. And because of that, he just has implemented a couple of months ago a monthly NDE that comes out to members on their email, unless they, you know, want to unsubscribe, which virtually nobody has wanted to unsubscribe because the NDEs, of course, are fascinating. And through the e-communication, we are going to resume a networking directory for people in at the regular membership level and higher to be, or it may be professional membership level or higher. It's a new membership structure, and I'm not remembering all the details, but in any case, it will be there for people who really want to be able to connect with others and, you know, for that purpose only, not for use in business or spamming or anything, but just people who really want to connect because of near-death related interests. So that'll be a benefit that's reinstated. So those are some of the things that experiencers can benefit from. We do have a message board where people can post messages. People who are members. So there's a way for people to connect in that way as well.
And that's on the IANS website, which is IANDS.org.
Right.
You're talking about the forum that is on the website, correct?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Okay.
That's, yeah. And yeah. Our website has a lot of other valuable resources, including general information about near-death experiences, some of the most important research papers, recent research papers that have revealed something new or helped to validate NDEs, those sorts of things are posted there. Of course, conference information and ways to get to find the nearest local group. Someone is interested in attending one of those meetings. They almost always are open to the general public. And I don't know how it is with your local group, but in ours here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I would say that about a third of the people who come are actually near-death experiencers, and the other third are people who have interest in the subject, usually because they've had some other kind of transpersonal experience and find that just the atmosphere, I think the single biggest comment I hear from people is that they feel safe to talk in the group in ways that they don't feel safe to talk in most other areas of their life. In any case, the website can list all of the local groups so that someone can find the one closest to them.
That actually would describe my group as well here in Nashville. And what's interesting, too, is that I've had people come from other states, for example, Alabama.
Wow.
And Georgia. A woman brought her 14-year-old daughter.
Hmm.
It was just a natural medium, and this dear young lady was a bit uncomfortable with the fact that she was having these experiences, but as a result of coming to the meeting and talking to me, she was so comforted by that.
And, oh, that's great.
And I let her know that what you're experiencing is completely normal and something to be honored.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so heartwarming to see people come from long distances and they gain the peace of mind that they were seeking. and they come away completely different and uplifted people. So, and I also like the idea, I've been talking with the group of IONS FOI facilitators, and it, you know, it would be very nice, and I'm hoping that we might be able to facilitate a virtual group where people can connect via telephone from anywhere in the world
mm-hmm.
and be able to talk and feel comfortable
mm-hmm.
And share with one another. So I think
yes.
these groups are tremendous. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that virtual group has the potential to be really helpful because although we have about 45 local groups spread throughout the U.S., there are a lot of areas where one is not readily available, and yet there are people all over who could benefit from that kind of connection with other NDEers and just other transpersonal experiencers. So the virtual group by conference call might really be a helpful kind of thing to implement. Yeah, the board is.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.